Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hola y bienvenidos a un otro episodio de Los Filmlosophers. Yo soy Eduardo. I hit the SAP button on accident. Hello and welcome to another
That's
exciting.
The most Spanish I've ever heard you speak.
Who are you?
We're the Filmlosophers. I'm Eddie, Chad Riley, Spencer Williams. How you guys doing?
Hola.
I'm good. I'm keeping SAP off because I don't know.
Bienvenidos a ti.
As you can tell, there's a little bit of a Latin flair, as well as some Spanish lessons going on. We got a great show in store for you. We got a great film that we just got out of that really took us all by surprise. So stick around as we get into that. But before we do, Chad, hit us with those opening credits.
I sure will. In between a variety of part-time jobs that we use to provide for our families, that's not true, the Filmlosophers podcast is still presented by Mingle Media TV and recorded live each week at VGB Studios. If you're frustrated by the disparity between the haves and the have-nots, you're in good company. You should totally join forces with us and subscribe to the Filmlosophers podcast on your favorite streaming platforms.
Join our voices!
That's what it sounded like.
¿Qué pasó, señor? New episodes debut each Wednesday on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Audio Boom, Player FM, Libsyn, and Stitcher.
Don't forget, even an amnesiac can learn a thing or two from our social media streams. Be sure to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101.
Even if you're a who? I'm sorry.
Amnesiac.
A what?
Amnesiac.
I forgot what you said. What'd you say?
Amnesiac.
Okay. Can we do this the whole time? That's delightful.
I'm going to mess up on that word eventually. Finally, don't think you have to limit yourself to just this episode. You can access our entire library of great content on our website at filmlosophers.com.
That's right. We got a website. We're using it loud and proud, and we're not even caring who is listening. Well, we do care, actually.
Well, we care.
What?
It matters. You matter. Everybody matters. We all matter. Dear. How about we just jump into this movie, shall we?
Let's do it.
Sounds good.
That's right. We are talking about 2018's reboot masterpiece, Overboard. The film that everybody had been anticipating as the previous iteration of this film back in the mid-80s kind of was a very interesting dynamic. And doing so in this now day and age would have been a little bit of taboo. Honestly, just from the standpoint of it all, but we got a chance to go see the reboot, and we actually are going to talk about it on this show.
What? Yeah. We're going to talk about a movie that we saw on this show?
Yes. Weird.
Who does that kind of stuff, right?
I'm scared.
You should be. Chad, hit us with that synopsis, goodness.
Okay. Kate is a single working-class mother of three who's hired to clean a luxury yacht that belongs to Leonardo, a selfish, spoiled, and wealthy Mexican playboy. After unjustly firing Kate, Leonardo falls off the boat and wakes up with no memory of who he is. To get payback, Kate shows up at the hospital and convinces the confused amnesiac.
The what?
The amnesiac.
The who?
The amnesiac. They're married. As Leonardo tries to get used to manual labor and his new family, quote unquote, Kate starts to wonder how long she can keep fooling her fake husband.
Yo soy Leonardo. Oye, ¿cómo estás?
Ay,
directed by Rob Greenberg, the film stars Anna Faris, Eugenio Derbez, Eva Longoria, and many others. As we said, Overboard is a reboot of a 1987 film of the same name, but the gender roles are reversed from the original, and the spoiled rich character is a female taking advantage of the male character. Spoiled rich character
being taken care of.
Was my last week.
That was what?
My last week where I couldn't say anything.
You couldn't say anything all last week?
That's right.
How do you function during the week?
Amnesiac.
So as we said, we got a chance to see this film. It was quite interesting. As we said, we tend to pride ourselves in watching movies that are of a certain caliber, and this movie, although it does seem to be one of those not normal movies that we would watch here as a show, we figured the fact that it's a reboot of a 1987 film, and the fact that I have this huge love for the 80s, and the fact that I was like, we have to see this, and you guys were like, we've never heard of it, and I said, we still have to see it.
And the fact that it's a new movie and there was nothing else worth watching.
That is 100% correct.
True. I didn't pay attention to the other movies that came out.
I mean, we could have watched Infinity War for like the 12th time.
Well, I'm all about that.
I mean, we could have totally made that work.
So. I think we've milked that for all it's worth for the moment.
For the moment.
On the podcast.
I think it's easy pretty much to say that if any news drops about the film or the follow-up film or anything, I think we could pretty much route a whole show just based on
absolutely.
That.
Oh, absolutely.
But we are not talking about Infinity War. We are talking about Overboard. If you're not familiar, Overboard's original film was starred by the incredible Kurt Russell and the magnificent Goldie Hawn, the dynamic duo couple who have been together for at least the last three decades.
But were not together. Yeah, they were. They were together by the time they did that movie.
Yeah, they were. They finally became a couple in the early 80s, I believe in 84. And then they are not married, which that was a question that we were having the last time we were talking about the film. Outside of the podcast, we were talking about it and we weren't sure. And I believe Chad's girlfriend had mentioned that they were
¿Qué?
Not married.
¿Por
sí.
qué?
¿Por qué, Chararito?
I think she was the one that said that they never got married. They never tied the knot, but they've been together for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly common law applies.
Oh, no doubt. Have any of you seen the original film?
Any of us? Well, the three of me have not.
Okay.
Spencer,
did you,
how about...
Did you check with the other two and just making sure? Just
I know their game. They don't watch movies, actually. Now I'm the only personality that watches movies.
And now
face
we're
forward,
moving,
everybody.
Now we're moving to Split, apparently. What about you, Spence? Have you seen the movie?
No, I haven't. I kind of forgot that this was on the docket that we were watching.
Wow.
I forgot so much
about... We literally planned this entire quarter out back in January, and you forgot?
There was shuffling around.
You know what?
And I don't think this was on there originally. But
yes, it was. It was. Yeah. It was.
Okay.
It was there.
It was there.
You may have forgotten.
Yeah, no, I forgot is like a theme with this movie for
Amnesiac.
Me.
Amnesiac.
Wow. Well, I've seen the original, and I've this was one of those movies that kind of like Chad was mentioning, his boss was talking about how it gets rerun on like TBS or TNT or one of those channels.
Yeah, it shows up every once in a while.
Yeah, I think that's where I first saw it on a you know, showing up on the TV and watching it and ending up buying it after the fact on VHS. It was early 90s. My parents had bought it and we saw the heck out of it over and over and over. And it was one of those movies that makes up part of like me learning to love cinema, me learning to love movies, mainly because it's such a simple plot line, but the unique aspect of the characters in it, the unique chemistry, I guess, if you say, of the couple in the film really worked. I mean, obviously, Goldie Hawn, like we said, Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell were a couple in real life. So making that work on an on-screen project, it really shines through.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the things that I had coming into this film. In terms of expectations, one of the biggest things I had was recognizing if there was chemistry between your two leads. Because whenever you have any kind of rom-com type of film, obviously...
Which this totally is.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
A rom-com.
Yeah, which the original one as well. You need to make sure that your leads have a unique kind of chemistry that works well and it doesn't seem to be forced, because the moment it seems like it's not working, then you're just watching two individuals who are, you know, who just don't seem like a realistic couple.
They can't sell it.
Exactly. So I think in terms of expectations for this film, that was one of my biggest ones, because of the fact that you have Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn as the example, if you will.
And I don't know that you're bound to compete with that necessarily.
Oh, no.
I mean, they really knew each other.
But in terms of the film...
Not to be weird. I didn't mean to be weird.
They really knew each other.
Well, you just took it to a level that we didn't have to go.
Wow.
What? Oh, gosh.
No. They really know each other.
I'd like to forget this. Amnesiac. Not the film, though. I'm not saying that about the film. I'm saying about you. And possibly me. I don't know.
But honestly, when it comes to that original film, the dynamic of the two, it works really well. They argue well. They recover well. They have this chemistry that just really plays well off of each other. And in terms of, like I said, romantic comedies, there are certain films where individuals don't usually mesh well. They don't have that realistic look. Take, for instance, like that movie The Proposal with Ryan Reynolds and Sandra Bullock. Those two were furthest from any kind of chemistry. The only reason why people had any kind of enjoyment was because Ryan Reynolds was being funny and ultimately being Ryan Reynolds. And you had Sandra Bullock, who was put into these awkward situations. They rarely had any, on-screen time together in the film. But I didn't see that working.
It was rare. It was a very similar dynamic at first to this one, in the case that it wasn't like they were fawning over each other in the beginning of their interaction. You know, similarly here, they're not. It's not a romantic comedy in the sense of, the Kate and Leonardo characters are really interested in each other at the beginning. Like they're not, and they develop that connection over time.
100%. Aside from that, the only other expectations I had was wondering how well it was going to be received, as the subject matter of the film could possibly be misconstrued as taboo. I mean, it's obviously based on a 1980s plot, which, if we're going to be honest, a lot of movies from the 80s had really like controversial topics and plot points. And this was one of those ones where you had, in the original, you had a single father of four boys who happens to take advantage of a rich, spoiled woman who falls off her boat, has amnesia, and to get back at her, makes her believe that she's, his wife. And so in this aspect, that kind of thing could really, trigger some people. And so my mindset was, I'm hoping that this doesn't become more fixated on like the more taboo portions of that film and just kind of let this blossom into the story that it could be. You know what I'm saying?
In terms of like, you mean in terms of the gender roles in this film being the flow being reversed here. So it's not a man taking advantage of a woman who has no recollection of who she is.
Exactly.
In this case, it's a woman taking advantage of a man who has no recollection of who he is, and that makes it better.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. I was like,
and that's the thing. That's kind of where I was. That's what I was kind of leading into in terms of, because of the fact that the gender roles are switched in this one, will it still be like a tap? Like in the first film, in the original film, he goes to really great lengths to make her believe this and this and that. He really pushes her to do marital things and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of that happens in the original film. But like I said, it's an 80s film, and that kind of stuff was like,
that's funny.
The culture at large was less publicly sensitive to
exactly
those dynamics and the subtext that it kind of reads into all of our lives.
Because in the original, they kind of bond a lot quicker than this particular film has them bonding. And so. But those were literally the only two expectations I had in terms of wondering how that was going to go about and how well the chemistry was going to work. So what about you, Chad?
I had no real expectations. I haven't seen the original. I haven't seen the Kurt Russell Goldie Hawn film. I think that going into the movie, I was hoping that it wasn't going to be, I hate to say it this way, but a standard rom-com. I enjoy good romantic comedies. I do. But when they're a little too normal, I guess, like when there's a little bit of, there was nothing new or unique about it, then I get kind of, I check out a little bit nearing the third quarter of the film.
You mean like the usual tropes and cliches?
Yeah.
And,
just okay. Like if the dynamic, if it's, like, they're not interested in each other, then they are, and then they get together, and then there's a conflict, and then whatever. I mean, a lot of romantic comedies follow the same exact story structure.
Yeah.
This one is at least unique in the sense of, because of what happens, the main conceit of the story is that one of the primary characters does not know who he is,
mm-hmm.
And starts to just live this identity that he's given. And so that at least makes it interesting. It's more than just your, you know, like it's sort of got elements of like The Taming of the Shrew, which is a Shakespeare play where, mm-hmm. The two lead characters have actually, you know, a lot of animosity toward each other, and yet like they have an attraction. That animosity is their attraction expressing itself. Here, there's animosity without attraction, and then he falls off the boat, loses his memory, and she decides to con him for a month. And at her friend's behest, by the way, she doesn't decide to do this alone. Not that I'm vouching for her, because it's still pretty darn despicable. But yeah, so there's that. She's using him not to be in a relationship. And he doesn't believe at first that there is a relationship, and so it's interesting how they structured the story in terms of the character arc for each of them, how yeah. each of them changes. It's not your typical, you know, two different people meeting and
worlds.
Coming together and like whatever. It's not your typical romantic comedy, yeah. and I appreciated that.
Any other expectations?
No, I was kind of, I you know, you can't help, but, well, I'll just say it. Chris Pratt and Anna Faris are no longer together, and the world mourns. That's a sad thing.
We do.
Or grieves.
We do.
Grieves. The world grieves.
No, we mourned. We definitely mourned.
So, this is the first, I don't watch Mom, you know, the show that she's
oh, yeah.
a part of on CBS. I never have watched it. So, this is the first time I've seen her in a role since that happened. I think they were probably still together when this was filmed, because movies tend to have a while in post-production before we get to see them. But anyway, it was the first time seeing her on screen since that all happened. So it was just like one of those, oh, I really liked the two of them as a couple. So it's kind of like, I know she's playing a role, but like, how's she doing? You know, I don't know. Mm. Similarly with him in Guardians. Infinity War.
Oh yeah.
So, or yeah, had they split by the time Guardians?
I think it was announced
debuted
during the Guardians was coming
obviously
out.
We've seen him numerous times in the past year or so. So
yeah,
but yeah. Anyway, it was just a point of intrigue more than anything. Had nothing to do with the movie. It was just like, you know, I don't
know.
Doing? Just like,
how you doing?
Does
Anna?
She look like she's doing okay? Okay, she played the role. All right. I don't know. It's
leave it to Chad to. Have sympathy for the actual actors, not the characters, but the
right,
actors.
Exactly.
Like, how are you doing, Anna? Like, how are you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
That's Chad to the fullest.
That's very nice. I'm a big-hearted guy.
What about you, Spence? Any expectations at all?
So I thought this movie was going to suck walking into it because
it's true. Those were his exact words when we walked into the theater. This movie's probably going to suck. And I'm like, Spence, you're probably right, but don't say it out loud.
Well, because, again, Amnesia. I forgot that this was a reboot.
Again, what?
Amnesia.
What's it? What?
I forgot that this movie was a reboot. So I thought this was like a one-off thing. So I'm like, we're watching a movie about this terrible woman who tricks a guy who can't remember who he is. Like, that's
yeah.
like what a very vulnerable time. Gonna kick someone when they're down.
Okay. I'm like, what is he going through puberty or something? Oh, just the amnesia part.
What?
Okay, is there like a vulnerable time? I'm
why
like,
is puberty
why
vulnerable?
Why did puberty have to come into this conversation?
What?
Well, I didn't want to say anything, but Spence's voice has been deepening, and so
wow.
I'm not talking to you anymore. So. Yeah. Anyway,
don't worry, guys. I got it from here.
Yeah, so I didn't think much of it, and the trailer didn't leave much to be inspired, but I was kind of impressed with how much I actually liked the movie afterwards.
You know, I'll agree with you on
it's
that.
It's still problematic.
Because the trailer did not make the movie, to
yeah.
me, did not make it look good.
Mm-mm, no.
No, I'm going to have to agree with Spence as well. I don't think the trailer gave me a lot of what I should have come into the movie expecting. Like, it really just was super surface stuff. Nothing too dynamic in terms of, oh, this is what's going to set this one apart from the old one. And this is, it didn't really have a big hook for me.
In a way, it kind of, in retrospect, it kind of expects that whoever's going to go see it
has seen
is old enough to have seen the first mm-hmm. one versus like promoting it as its own property, like a new movie.
Yeah.
And not a reboot.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, this didn't do as horribly as many people.
It almost think. Worked to its in its favor for me because
oh,
I was not very impressed by the trailer, and I was, you know, decently impressed with the movie. I mean, it wasn't like, wow, that's a great movie, but it was enjoyable, it was fun, it was lighthearted, and
yeah.
I walked out with a smile on my face. That's the point of a comedy.
Well, and I think, too, it, not to be mean or anything, but the trailer set the bar pretty low, so jumping over that one wasn't going to be too difficult of a task. So jumping into the movie, as we dive right on in, obviously we're introduced to Kate, who is played by Anna Faris, and Leonardo, who is played by Derbez. And you have these two different people from two different worlds. As Chad had mentioned earlier, you have Leonardo, who is the son of a billionaire, who owns this huge company that apparently makes bags of concrete mix. That's all we know
well,
of.
It was construction supplies.
Was it?
That was one of many supplies that they make.
Yes.
Didn't they say that his dad is like the third richest person in the world or something?
Oh, I don't remember.
Third or second.
Or the third richest person in North America or something. They qualified it somehow.
Yeah, they mentioned it at one point in the film. But you are introduced to the dynamic of how these
But Leonardo
two live.
Is not really involved in the company. He's just the playboy no. with a yacht of his own and a full like service staff on the yacht. He just goes around the world wherever he wants.
Yeah, 100%. He's just somebody who lives off of his yacht pretty much and parties all day and all night and spends time with supermodels and drinks champagne and just goes nuts. And Kate is the exact opposite. She is a struggling mother of three girls who is trying to make her help herself pass the nurse exam, some kind of exams for nurses.
Yeah.
Right.
And she is working two shifts, two jobs, I believe. Is it
yes.
two or just one?
Yes.
Two.
Yeah. She's doing the pizza delivery and the carpet cleaning.
That's right. And in the midst of all that, she is trying to pay her bills. She's trying to pretty much live. Ultimately, you know, she's struggling to pay her house payments, her everything else and whatnot, and has a mother who is played by
Swoozy Kurtz,
who looks scary in this movie.
Pretty much, yeah. Basically, yes.
Not to knock this actress, I'm pretty sure.
I mean, like, she looked still like herself, but like there was something.
She looked sickly.
She did.
Woman,
just
like,
come right out and say
she,
it.
She looked wow. like she was about to keel over any minute in the film.
But I don't know
honestly,
that it was that extreme.
She did look like that.
With the
like
amount
she
of,
was going to keel over?
With the amount of makeup that woman had, I'm surprised
I
she
was
could keep
say,
her head
it's,
up.
It's really the amount of makeup that they put on her.
I mean, this is a far cry from Liar Liar. That's all I got to say.
I was
true.
Concerned for her health. That's
yeah.
how I felt.
I'm like,
which was not part of the point of the plot. Like, you didn't need to be.
This coming from the man who was wondering how Anna Faris was feeling after the breakup during the movie as well.
I'm saying that the character's point is not for you to be concerned about her health.
Honestly, I thought she was going to die like halfway through the movie. Like the character, not Swoozy.
Wow. Sorry, Swoozy. Spencer is sorry.
If she was a fan of this show, she's not anymore. That's all we have to
sorry,
say.
Sorry, Swoozy. Sincerely, Spencer. That's a lot of S's.
Too many. We can't do that again.
But you're introduced to that dynamic. Her mother is a aging woman who is wanting to do stuff with her life before she feels like she can't do it anymore. So she's also off to do her own stuff, which is vaguely
yeah, she like wants to be an entertainer, always has, and now as
yeah
as
like,
a senior citizen she has an opportunity to join like a senior theater troupe
yeah
and
yeah.
instead of watching her grandchildren, which was the arrangement that they apparently had, mm-hmm. she decides to leave, and that then leaves Kate, Anna Faris's character, with very few options for what to do for her daughters while she's trying to cram for the exam to become a nurse.
So in the interim of all that happening with Kate, Leonardo, who is, as we said, this billionaire playboy who is just roaming the seas of the Pacific Ocean, his father is actually very ill and is looking to pass the company off to one of their kids. In the father's mind, hopefully the son, which isn't really explained as to why he chooses.
Yeah, there's a lot in this movie that's not explained.
Yeah.
I have a beef with some of that we'll get to later.
It's almost as though, like, the movie's like, oh, yeah, this is happening. You don't need to know specifics.
Exactly.
Look at Anna Faris with the pizzas. Isn't that funny? Pay attention to Anna Faris. I'm looking at you, Spence.
Well, I thought that the reason why he wanted his son to have the company was because, like, he's an old-style guy and, you know, a man should be in charge of the company.
It's stated as maybe a possible mindset, but it's never confirmed. Mm. Like, the sisters are like, oh, you guys just, you're old school and you have this machismo, you know, style of thinking, and that's why you want him. But then other things come up and whatnot. And so ultimately, Leonardo has to dock into the same city that Kate is in. Kate has to, pretty much what you see in the trailer, Kate has to clean his, you know, yacht. He gets upset at her, tosses her equipment over. She gets upset. That's the reason. That's kind of the catalyst for everything that happens in the film.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, they have this good chemistry before they have the bad chemistry. Like,
yeah,
she's there cleaning up his mess on his yacht because she's a carpet clean. This is her carpet cleaning job that she's in the midst of in this particular instance when they first meet. And he's actually really charming and mm-hmm. normal in terms of how he interacts with her. And then later on, she's trying to collect her check, basically, and he's trying to get her to become a servant in the moment, like not to join his... Well, he does essentially invite her to join the yacht and become a servant for him on the yacht. But when she won't, he still wants her to go and get him a fruit, but he doesn't know what fruit he wants. So she wants him to bring him. He wants her to bring him two options.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, that's not what I'm here for. They get in an argument. He throws her stuff off the boat and then they part ways. So it's sort of like they actually had a good interaction, decent interaction. And then a bad one. And then they aren't around each other anymore.
Yeah. And it's her losing the equipment and having to be in the hole of like $3,000 to the carpet cleaning company.
Which
that
is way too much money to charge for a carpet cleaner.
100%.
And like
that thing was $500 max.
Liquid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that was ridiculous.
Plus, don't they have insurance on those things?
They yes. should.
Like
if they're $3,000.
You're cleaning up caca most of the time. Why wouldn't you have some type of insurance on the equipment if it cacas out? I mean, I'm just saying it would make sense. This company needs to reevaluate its business strategy.
Well, yeah.
But as we said, all that is the catalyst for what's to happen in the film as Leonardo ends up falling off the side of his boat, has amnesia, roaming through the city, butt naked in a robe, is found, and she decides, with the help of Eva Longoria's character, to persuade everybody else that he is her husband. That took a second. I had to kind of connect the dots there.
Yeah, it is. It's a bit complicated.
Yeah.
A bit like a telenovela.
Which is, here's the interesting part. And this is one of the parts where I kind of have issues with. We're in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody have a DNA tester? You know, can you check fingerprints?
Not to mention that if he's the son, the firstborn child of one of the wealthiest people on Earth, then how would people go so long without knowing who he is?
Yeah, 100%.
Independent of what she says.
Well, and even like common practice in the hospital, in my mind, should have been like, okay, well, we don't know who he is, so let's take his pictures, let's get his fingerprints, let's take a sample of blood, let's, I don't know, get a tongue print. I don't know.
Tongue print?
So
that's not a thing.
Things I learned today, apparently... Everybody has a unique tongue design on their...
The government doesn't document that.
You never know. I just found out the other month that CRISPR was a real thing, okay? So back up. I'm just saying.
What, like a vegetable CRISPR? Oh, wait.
No, like.
I got up.
Spence, you got to be quicker than that, man. Come on.
Like a vegetable CRISPR?
Yes. It's been a government secret all this time, Spencer.
The vegetable CRISPR.
But you would think, because back in 1987, mind you, some of those types of technologies weren't as readily available to do or to use at the disposal of, you know, things like this. Like if it's a small town, obviously they may not have the money to do things like that. But we're in 2018. Everybody has cell phones. Everybody has pretty up-to-date technology. Why didn't they do that? I don't know. That just kind of...
Because that's not the story they were telling.
Going back to the, oh, look at Anna Faris and how she's doing with her daughters. Yeah,
yeah, take it. Yeah, there's quite a bit about this story, back to me having an axe to grind. There's quite a bit about this story that just is sort of, it's, you got to recognize it's not really, it's not a complicated story. You're supposed to just enjoy the flow and the humor and the energy of the scenes. That's why you're there in the theater. However, there were quite a few things that were pretty noticeably absent or skipped over. Certainly, hospital practices for identifying an amnesiac John Doe kind of person, right? Also, there's reference to the girl's birth father at one point. It's insinuated that he died, but you don't know who he was, how he died, how long ago it was. Like, you don't know anything about it. And you kind of, I don't know, because of how much they play on the father-daughter dynamic with this stranger in their house and how quickly the girls, well, most of them, kind of gravitate toward him and play their role as if he's always been their father. It seems a little insincere, especially because you don't know any details at any point in time, really, about their actual father who's no longer in the picture. That was a thing that really bugged me a lot because especially... Like the two younger kids, if presumably they were very young when whatever happened to their dad happened,
they're
the most gung ho embracing this stranger in their house and calling him daddy right off the bat and whatever. Like they're so gung ho. I don't know that little kids who have that kind of trauma that young would immediately go into play acting mode 24/7 easily. You know. I don't know. They just, but again, it's not that kind of movie.
True. No, but another part of like, so going to that train of logic, it then questions in my mind because there is the conversation. So Anna Faris's character has a quick conversation with the mother at the beginning of the film where they're talking about how the mother is wanting to go and do her stuff before, you know, she's not able to anymore or whatever. And the mother says, well, you're not the only one whose husband died or whatever. And before you can really like dig into that comment, Anna Faris's character says, "Your husband didn't die, Mom. You and Dad divorced," and it plays off to the comedic element of that.
Yes, and it's just left hanging there for the rest of the movie.
But then you have a later conversation between one of the daughters and Leonardo, whom at this time already believes he's the father, and they're already well underway as in this like charade of, you know, him playing dad.
Such a charade.
Amnesiac. You get this little back and forth between him and the youngest where she says, are you going to leave us? And he says, I'm not going to leave you. I'm your dad. And she said, well, sometimes dads leave. And in my mind, that's like, well, wait. So then did her dad die or did he just leave? And because that, like, I was fine with the idea of, okay, dad died. Got it. But then she says something like that, and I'm like, oh, well, then did her dad actually
die?
Or
is that what they told her because she was so young? But the fact that they leave it so ambiguous is actually frustrating.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
I mean, it legitimately, like, I am fascinated by human beings. Human psychology is fascinating to me, and so I just was struck by how little they even talked about it, you know, when obvious, it's harder to believe the characters in spite of all the fun and all the things that are going on that are comedic and enjoyable. And that's the point of the movie. It makes the characters a bit unbelievable to me.
But then what happens is that you get this, this interesting style of comedy where it's no longer like, there's no substance to it. It's all playing off of these comedic beats every time. Like, you get stuff like we were saying about the instance where's the father? Like, okay, where is the father? Is he dead? Did he leave? Is that what they told the little girl, like Chad said? And then it's like, okay, I want to enjoy this film. And I know we said we enjoyed this movie, but we're picking at it.
And
but
we did.
We did. It's just...
It's just our job to, you know...
Exactly. Right. That's what we do. We dig deep into these movies, and this is one of those things where if you're wanting to create a romantic comedy film, the romantic part has to be taken a little bit more seriously, and then you pepper in or you balance it with the comedy. That's naturally how romantic comedy works.
Well, and even the subplot of the daddy-daughter relationship is a prominent feature of this story. And for the attachment that grows between Leonardo and each of these girls to be as strong as it is by the climax of the film, it's one of those, like, in story structure terms, you talk about, you know, was this outcome earned or unearned? Like, basically, does it make sense? Do you have enough logical and emotional connecting points to say, oh, that totally feels authentic and real and earned, or they just needed it to do that for the story, and that's the reason it happened, and that's unearned? And I think that's the angle that they could have done a better job getting that heartstring connection if they did give us a little bit more about what happened to original dad, how that made the girls feel growing up for however long he's not been there, for whatever reason he isn't there, and then the connection that they form with this other man actually feels stronger to me sitting in the audience because it's more earned.
Yeah.
Now, if they had not leaned into it as much in terms of the daddy-daughter thing, I wouldn't be as bothered by it. If it was mostly focused on the witty / catty interplay between Kate and Leonardo, and that was really most of the point of the film, then I wouldn't have cared as much.
Yeah,
about
I agree 100%.
The trauma that these girls would have gone through to now be at this point. But because most of the headway that he makes in the family is with the girls, not with the mother, mm-hmm. for a long time, it would have felt more genuine and authentic if we knew a little bit more about what happened to their birth father.
And it's not to say that we could have written a better story. I mean, maybe Chad could have, but we couldn't have written a better story. But
it would have ended up being a drama, like a sad, sappy, psychological,
but
well, because
like cry
really
kind of story
about like the narrative of the movie. It kind of is, because it's about this woman who tricks this man into just being the husband of the house for a month, and then like manipulates her daughters into continuing a lie to the same man, and even after like they form bonds with each other, which is kind of a horrific story.
That does sound like a Stephen King book. Really?
What? Hold on.
Well, no, this took place in Oregon, not Maine.
Well, true.
That's a good point.
Wrong coast.
But it says something to the effect of how this was written, in terms of you have a film that's hitting off of these comedic beats that resonate with people who love the original. But at the same time, the writers are wanting to create these dramatic, because that's what they are. They're dramatic moments. They're impactful moments that happen in the film that draw you to connect with the dynamic of the Leonardo and the youngest, or Leonardo and the middle child, or Leonardo and the oldest child, who happens to be a preteen teenager. I don't really think they say her age at any point, but she seems to be she's like either a preteen or teenager. But you have these moments, and because of those moments in the film, I think it does more harm than good in terms of it stating that instead of establishing, oh, they have these great moments, and oh, he taught her how to ride a bike, or oh, he stood up for her for this, or oh, he was there for a football game there. Instead of allowing those to be just these simplistic moments, the writers dive deep into bigger stories that could be, they could be important to the overall storyline, but they don't pay off with it. They don't. There's nothing. There's no payoff for it. There's no end result where you're like, okay, so why does she think that daddies sometimes leave? Or the oldest daughter, why does she have trouble with, why is she miserable? Why is she, you know, in this dynamic or whatever, when they have that back and forth with her and the guy? Or even, why does the little girl show up in a tux at the end of the film? Is that like a hint at right. some type of, you know?
That was really confusing to me, that they just threw it in there. Because it's sort of like, I totally understand she's playing football with the flag, or flag football with, you know, on an all boys team basically and whatever. And that makes sense. But yeah, then they suddenly have her dressed in a suit at the end of the film.
Yeah.
When there just wasn't any precursor to it. It's not that dynamic in itself is off putting. It's that like, were you going to explain that to me ever? You know, like it is kind of like they let you into this small caricature of the family picture, but they don't actually show you the whole thing. Again, it's a rom-com. It doesn't have to. We tend to go a little bit deep.
Yes.
I do like, though, Spencer, what you were saying. The basic premise of this film is dastardly.
Yeah, no, it's horrifying.
So, like, the fact that it's a comedy, I mean, and it's a comedy that works.
Yeah,
I mean,
we
all laughed. It was enjoyable. But, like, it is a dastardly plot. Like, you wouldn't, if this were described on the 11 o'clock news at night.
Oh, yeah, it'd fit.
It'd be
perfect.
Like the most dramatic, like, up next at 11, you know,
local
find
woman
out what
in
this
amnesiatic husband
did to
her. Yeah, because
like,
that's what it is.
Kidnap.
It's imprisonment.
Well, and she says kidnap. She at one point, she says, I basically kidnapped this man. No, not basically.
Not,
you did kidnap this man.
Yeah, 100%.
This man, Anna Faris.
This is Anna Faris, not Kate. It's actually the actress who did this.
This is all just in. This is what you were worried about, Chad. This is all just as a result of that breakup.
Like, she's not okay, you guys. She's not okay.
Like,
and neither is he. They need to get back.
The actor
okay?
was like, I didn't even know I was going to be in this movie. She just kidnapped me. It's funny that you said this is like one step away from becoming Misery. So.
See, exactly. Stephen King.
There it is.
There it is.
We found it.
I told you. I knew if anybody was going to tie it together, it'd be Eddie.
But although we are dissecting this film quite a bit, there are a lot of elements of this film that actually did work. I did like some of the ways this film kind of helped the understanding of what some mindsets of some husbands may have out there, kind of giving that cooler, you know, water cooler talk at certain points. Like there's a really great,
because she signs him up to be like a construction worker basically, with a crew that's doing a pool renovation at some, you know, rich guy's house, and he's never worked with his hands a day in his life, but he doesn't know that. And then so yeah, he's kind of cutting up over lunch with his crew. Not his crew, but the crew that he's a part of.
Yeah. And they have this great conversation about how this guy feels like his marriage is like this. It's all like this. And he feels like he's not even married and blah, blah, blah. And all the rest of them are like, yeah, we feel like that all the time. That's kind of the dynamic of marriage. And I'm like, it's true. No. I'm just...
Ooh, I am leaving this studio before your wife comes in with a knife.
She did she not? After we left the theater.
Don't
she
look
was,
at me.
You were there with
I'm
us.
Not gonna no, I don't know anything.
So Spencer amnesia. Was there and we were talking about it.
Amnesia. I don't know anything. Amnesia.
But the dynamic of the conversation, there are certain things that you could truly resonate with.
That was extraordinary. Please
anyway.
Always claim amnesia when you don't want to answer a question, Spencer. Amnesia. Just like that.
There were certain elements of the conversation that really resonated with individuals who are either in a relationship or in a dynamic with somebody that, you know, sometimes it has its ups and sometimes it has its downs. But the result of that conversation really kind of leads to a really satisfying ending. of that conversation. And it was one of the most enjoyable parts of the film for me, seeing the dynamic of those individuals. It was great seeing the actor who plays one of the guys. He what does he call himself? The Godfather or something like
they
that?
They call him. Yeah.
And he's been in a lot of other movies. He was in Get the Gringo. He was in Man on Fire. He's played a lot of roles similar to that. So to see him in this one, and it's really refreshing. And seeing his comedy chops come out like that, I liked it. And I think that conversation in itself was probably the high point of the film for me.
As a husband in your own right, well, you had some simpatico kind of vibes going, I think.
As somebody who...
Is what it sounds like.
As somebody who has, at this table, has been in the longest relationship, mm-hmm. I'm just saying that the conversation that happened here, I'm pretty sure like anybody who's been in a relationship long enough has had similar conversations or conversations where you're wondering like, where am I at? And having that reassurance at the end of it to be like, oh, you know, this is okay. It's going to get better.
You're not the only person who feels this way.
Exactly. It was like going to an AA meeting. It totally worked out for me. You're getting all that support and all that kind of stuff, you know, and getting a good slap at the end of it. I don't know if they do that at AA meetings, but they should.
Probably not.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that'd be interesting. Like, you sober? Nope.
Yeah, people on the edge of sobriety probably don't need slaps.
You don't know. Have you? Never mind.
Oy.
Chad, what were some of the high points for you in this film?
Let's see. Derbez is known for, which Leonardo, the actor, Eugenio Derbez,
yes.
Right? He's known for somewhat slapstick comedy styles. He's done that for years in other performing roles. So it was fun to see some of that. You don't often see physical comedy.
Yeah.
In a romantic comedy in this way. I don't know. There were a couple of moments that were just, it was playing to his strengths as a performer, which I liked. It wasn't forcing him to just be a romantic comedy lead, which is definitely a thing and is a thing that would have felt less genuine had they made him do that. So I appreciated that. I also really appreciated that they did not do the entire movie in English. There are significant segments. I would say almost 50% of the film is spoken in Spanish and subtitled because the characters who are talking are Spanish-speaking characters, and they're talking to each other authentically in Spanish.
And it feels more natural in that aspect. It's not a forced...
Yeah, it's like you're watching members of a family talk over, mm-hmm. you know, the father's, you know, possible deathbed or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it feels very natural and authentic. The other thing that it does is emphasize the best part of this movie, which is the novella. So this is
Chad's domain. I'm going to step back.
This movie telegraphs the fact that, yes, it's meant to be a rom-com. Yes, the main plot, Spencer, is dastardly and despicable. And yes, it mirrors the flow of a novella, a Spanish soap opera, right? So
that it does.
They telegraph it at the beginning, the first time that she's in the pizza restaurant and the cook in the kitchen is watching a novella. And they do it throughout the film. They reference novellas. And they even talk about how pieces of this storyline, what's happening in their quote-unquote lives, resembles a novella, right? And so I think the fact that they incorporated so much authentic Spanish language dialogue with subtitles really underscored and enhanced that connection. So I thought that that was a winning strategy in terms of the creative team behind this movie.
I was actually surprised how much Spanish there was in this movie. Because when they first started, I was like, well, when are they going to switch to English? And then they didn't. And I was like, this is amazing.
This is amazing. And yet
Americans
you complained at the
read.
Beginning of this episode. Look at you. I'm going
to
keep the SCP. Whatever.
I don't know Spanish.
Silencio.
That's what I was saying. I don't know what you said.
What?
What?
Amnesia.
I think that's the same in both languages.
Amnesia?
It's pronounced differently, maybe. Like amnesia. But I think it's the same word.
We're going to get our Spanish-speaking listeners be like, you guys are all wrong.
Your wife will correct
my
all
wife,
of us.
Exactly.
don't worry about it. She will fix this.
That's why I didn't say anything in Spanish.
What about you, Spence? Any other high points of the film?
I think basically just like lots of interpersonal relationships. I thought the relationships in this movie kind of worked well. Like Leonardo's relationship with like the construction crew. Now they're always just like ragging on him. Especially when Lindick, he's trying to like use a wheelbarrow to just dump some rocks into
so good.
A box. It was pretty awesome. And just like
they're like
as he's going up and down. Yeah, I really love those construction guys. They were so awesome. And then Eva Longoria, she does like a great job as the master schemer of Kate's plan.
Yeah, true. It is really her idea.
Yeah.
Did they ever establish her? She's not related in any way.
No, they're friends.
Okay, they're just friends. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but no, I thought like a lot of the relationships worked really well in this movie.
Yeah. It's just, like I said, the only thing that really hiccups the film is a lot of those moments in the film where there was an opportunity to go deeper or at least to give somewhat of an explanation as to why certain beats were missed because of the dramatic aspect of the film. But I think overall it was still a fun film. The theater that we were in, lots of people were laughing. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
We're gonna talk about this.
I've never wanted to drop kick a child in my entire life, but oh my gosh. This child would not stop making noise. And it would have been fine if it was just like the first 5-10 minutes.
I wish this was a video. I wish people could see your face right now.
It was the whole
film. Let me tell you.
Film.
Eddie was really mad the whole film.
I was.
Did you do your extreme shushing?
Yes.
This is one of my favorite things about going to a movie with Eddie. Eddie is not afraid to fully. He did this when we saw Infinity War.
In the D-box. Behind us.
No, and you the guy leaned, you got up out of your chair, leaned over the railing, and emphatically shushed down into his ear.
Hey, and they got quiet, didn't they? Shoot.
Probably. I don't know. I was watching a movie. I don't know.
I couldn't. I just pay attention to so much that's going on around me, and this was one of those moments, aside from the Infinity War, which I could literally hear them speaking. Their voices was trailing over the rails, but this was like this child wasn't even talking. He was just making noise and the parents were right there. And I'm like, are you for real? She's like, no, 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 no. I'm like, Lord above.
You know, the interesting thing was for me, you were more distracting than the kid was.
Because
I didn't even notice the kid until you pointed it out.
Because I hear everything. And it's like when I'm paying attention to the movie, I've said this before. When I'm watching a film, I'm not just watching the film, but I'm also watching the people that are watching the film because I like to see everybody else engage in certain aspects. I can fully devote my viewing to the film, but I'm also aware.
It's true. If you ever sit by Eddie, he's like a chameleon. He's got one eye on the screen and one eye side glaring at you.
It's true. One time
he's giving you the side eye all the time.
One time I couldn't get it unstuck, and it was difficult driving home. So,
boo.
What was that? No, but this child, oh, Lord above. It was so difficult to focus on the film. And there were like certain times where the child stopped, but then all the way through till the end, and I was like, I'm gonna let them go, I'm gonna let them leave, because if I get up, I'm gonna glare at this child like nobody's business. This child will see the evil eye that I can give, and I will make sure this child wets themselves. Like, seriously.
Eddie suddenly turns around and says, if you drop another moon on me, I'm gonna lose it.
Exactly.
Sorry, Infinity War.
Infinity War.
Can't stop thinking about it.
But aside from that child, I actually had a really good time watching the film. I think in terms of certain parts, like we said, the storyline, they could have been drawn out a little bit more, or at least explained. But I think overall, for what it's worth, I think this film does a good job at being just simply a romantic comedy. I mean, not so much as the reboot aspect. I wouldn't really want to dig too much onto that. But I would say, for people who are wanting to experience this story for the first time and they have no recollection or even have seen the first one, I think this is a great opportunity. This is a great story that's being told for people to go and, you know, experience.
I think it's definitely, it does its job. It accomplishes what it sets out to do. I don't know that I would say it's one of the best rom-coms I've ever seen.
No.
I don't know that I would say that they have the best chemistry as lead characters. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit forced by the end, in my personal opinion, that they fell so head over heels for each other because, again, most of the heart connections are between Leonardo and the children, not Leonardo and Kate.
Yeah.
So, but I do think that they do a serviceable job of showing two characters who are despicable in different ways, both changing for the better over the course of the film, and you feel happy for them by the end. So,
yeah,
it does what it set out to do.
So, with that said, why don't we go around the table and see if this film passes or fails? Oh, actually, before we do, any last thoughts, Spencer? About the film. I see your face, and it looks like you want to say something, but you don't.
No, I don't think
so. You sure? Is it just gas? Okay. What's just gas?
It's not that.
Awkward.
All right, then. Let's go ahead and go around the table if it passes or fails, and how many monocles, starting with Senor Spencer.
Hey. Okay. So, yeah, this movie passed for me.
Okay.
Was a lot better than I thought it was. I'm always kind of shocked by that fact. But I think I will give this a 2.8.
A 2.8. Okay.
Not quite a 3. Not quite a 2.5.
All right.
It's meandering a little bit.
Meandering. Oh, nice. All right. Chad.
Yeah, I love that because I was sitting here thinking exactly the same thing. I'm like, I think it would technically be like a 2.75 because I'm between a 2.5 and a 3. So 2.75. And wow. I'd still say it passes. I know that's less than 50% out of 5, but I wasn't expecting much out of this movie. You've got to keep in mind, I wasn't expecting to enjoy it. I did enjoy it. It made me laugh several times. You know, it was not a bad experience. It just wasn't like the most compelling film for me. So 2.75.
I have to agree. This film does pass for me. It is a passable rom-com. It's a great story that could have been told better, but in terms of what it represents and as a reboot and how it's the director and the writers have decided to change certain aspects for the now generation, I have to give them the kudos to making that attempt for this film. So I give it a pass. And in terms of monocles, I would have to say I'm going to have to give it just a 2.5 out of 5. This film, like I said, it's good, but those plot points really do weigh on you quite a bit because it almost stops the momentum of certain parts of the film when it gets rolling, and that momentum is so necessary for like a romantic comedy like this because if it stops, then it has to stop for a specific reason, not because the story doesn't complete itself, but because of the fact that the overall, you know, film just jumbled under whatever. So, giving it a 2.5 on that one. But if you agree with us, let us know on our Facebook page at facebook.com/philosophers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/philosophy101. And let us know your thoughts. The film is out in theaters right now. So if you get a chance, go check it out. We'd love to hear what you think. Let you know of a couple upcoming weekend releases. We got Breaking In with Gabrielle Union and Life of the Party with Melissa McCarthy. That actually rhymed.
Oh, that's what that is.
Yeah.
I was looking at it like, what is that movie?
It took me a second, too. I'm like, is that an actual movie coming out? What is Life of the Party? And then the poster has like a big old Melissa McCarthy face on it.
Right.
I'm like, ah, one of those.
Well, I know what we're watching next week.
You might. but yeah, this was a fun conversation. Stick around if you can and check out our extra credit episode where we talk about reboots and as to whether or not they should actually be made. Mm. We've got a couple of opinions on this show, and I know Spencer has a really strong opinion about one aspect of the reboots from recent. So if you want to find out what Spencer has to say as well as the rest of us, stick around for extra credit. But like I said, check out the film. Let us know what you think. And hit up a lot of our previous episodes at filmlosophers.com. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.